Hey, good morning, everybody. This is Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to an episode recording. We're recording today episode number 86. I can't believe we're saying this. I feel like we just started yesterday doing this podcast for this Localization Fireside Chat. Today, I have the honor and the pleasure to be joined by a friend, a colleague, and a well-known name in the industry, Kaitan Malinowski. And Kaitan, welcome to the channel. Good to see you.
And Thanks, Robin.
Good to have you here.
And nice to see you, too.
And, you know, you and I, for the audience, for those, we're not breaking any secrets by saying that we've worked together at some point when you worked with Lionbridge. You no longer work for Lionbridge, but we've worked with together. You were in Poland, I believe in Warsaw. Yeah. And we've had some exchanges over the years. And so welcome again to the channel. As we say on this channel, everybody's got a story. and you know, we've heard so many stories. We were recording episode number 86 today. We've heard so many good stories. Some stories are shocking to some extent, but they're all nice and they're all positive. And when we talk about the localization story, there's three categories, if I may say that. One is people tell me I got into the industry by accident. I fall into it, and some people tell me like on purpose I joined, and some people they tell me it's a purposefully I joined the industry. Like I happy accident plus on purpose I was seeking something and I found it. So yeah. Before any further ado, and before we dig into the hot topic of the hour, let's start by getting to know you on a personal level. Just let me tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us your story, if you don't mind. The floor is yours.
Sure. So I'm Kaitan. Hello, everyone. I'm Polish by origin, but today I live in Italy, in just outside a wonderful city of Milan, in North Italy. And yeah, I got to into localization quite a long time ago. It was 2006. And you're absolutely right. A lot of people tell this, and this is also my story. It has been by accident. And I never planned any thought, and I actually never realized the industry like this exists. I was just out of university, and I studied marketing and management. So not kind of really connected to the language industry, though languages were also always kind of big part of my my life. I speak a couple of languages, and maybe a fun fact out of the languages that I speak also Serbian, which is not so common language for people to speak. Obviously, a bit of Italian, a bit of French, English, Polish, which is my native language. So few languages. That I can speak. And you know, I got into this industry by just kind of friends telling me about a company like Lionbridge that's starting to grow in Warsaw, would I would be interested in kind of joining it. And it was supposed to be actually a summer job. And believe it or not, this was my first job out of the university. And I stayed 17 years with the company. So and it never got boring. It never got boring. So it was a fun journey.
Oh, absolutely. Well, great story. I mean, I've been saying this on the channel for a while. You seem to be aligned with my story, how I got into it by complete accident for me as well. So it's a happy accident. Otherwise, I wouldn't have stayed in the industry for as long as I did, which is great. Which brings me back to you and I had a few conversations before this recording today. And, you know, we always talk about the state of the industry. Before we get into that, what are you up to now? Like, what are you doing now? I know you no longer work for Lionbridge, but what are you doing?
Yeah, so there's another part of that story, right? So after 17 years, and somehow at that time, right, my wife got a wonderful opportunity to work in Italy. Being so long with the company, at some point, you just kind of thought like, okay, go for it. I'm going to move with you and I'm going to figure it out. And I started a small consulting gig, basically. It's called Biangle. And it's I work both with companies from the localization industry and on the client side, so basically all of the other industries. And with the localization industry, I help them companies kind of reposition for AI. I help them with the product strategy, with product marketing, and overall kind of business strategy. And then for all the others, I bring localization knowledge and expertise to the table. I help them, jump on the localization boat, go up in the localization maturity curve. But I also help with AI transformation and sort of bring kind of language expertise there as well. So it's these kind of two customer segments that I service.
So one of the things that people like you've done a phenomenal jump, from 17 years being employed to starting a consulting gig on your own. That's quite the jump. I mean, you go from a secure position to less secure position from an employment perspective. Maybe it is secure. Maybe it's better secure. I have no idea. But from the general audience, from the outside looking in, they see that as a risky jump. So how did you manage that?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. And yes, you're absolutely right. It is a risky jump. And it's on one end. But on the other hand, it's very liberating, right? Being 17 years with one company and being in a large company, right, with a lot of processes, a lot of structure, I think it's very liberating to do something on your own and just kind of try to do these things. And it's funny because you have to do everything. Like you're salesman, you're marketing guy, you're operations guy. You actively hunt for customers. You are your IT support. So everything is on you, and it's funny. I learn a lot, so it's a really really interesting experience. I also very much appreciate kind of working a lot with the customer side. Going deep in some of the customer organizations, understanding how they do business, where they use localization, what kind of problems they have. I actually like to think about the work that I do in terms of a problem space between three main topics, which is language, technology, and business, and kind of help companies solve these problems. So it's you're right. It's a risky jump, but it's very liberating. It's very rewarding, fun at the time. Obviously, it's also frustrating when you have to deal with complexities of running your own business and having to deal with accounting issues and all of these different things. But it's totally doable. And actually, I would recommend, especially for people that have been quite long time with a company, to just kind of embrace this and do this jump, because it's very liberating.
So it's not like moving to the dark side or something, is it?
Yeah.
So beside the changing jobs, you changed countries. I mean, you mentioned you were in Poland, and then you are in Italy now. Has that had any impact on you?
Yes. It's a big change, and this is not a first rodeo for me. I'm a kid of diplomats, so I am in my early kind of childhood years, I would change countries every 4 or 5 years. So up to my 21st year, I would have, I don't know, five or four different countries that I lived in, or five kind of moves that I make. So it wasn't kind of completely new. But it took some adjusting, right? It's a different culture, it's a different language, it's just a different way you do things and go about things here. Like we had these kind of awkward situations when you walk into a cafe at, I don't know, noon or 2 p.m. and you ask for a cappuccino, and everybody looks at you with this crazy kind of look because Italians obviously drink coffee with milk up until like, I don't know, 10, 11 in the morning. And after that, it's just espresso. So you run into these kind of situations, but you learn and you learn this new culture. I think it's fascinating when you learn this language and you absorb the language and through the language, you learn the culture, this cultural references, and you kind of realize maybe loan words in Polish or other languages, So it's a fascinating journey, and I enjoy it very much.
So, now that you're starting on your own and you've got a few things on the go now, brand new stuff, brand new initiative. And I know, having been doing this, speaking to a lot of professionals in our industry, I've met a few consultants over the years, over the year and a half that I've been doing this. here on this channel. Is there a demand for consulting business? Is there expertise out there that is required for the consulting business? Is it, my question, it's more related to, is the localization industry to some still a mystery? And that's, they need the external help to help them.
Yes, yes. I think it is. The demand is pretty big. And the reason is, there are many reasons for this, right? There is a lot of change going through the business anyways, because of AI, and a lot of companies are reevaluating their localization practices. Some of companies that haven't been so far along the localization maturity curve are kind of realizing, hey, we've been doing this in a very manual way. We've been using, I don't know, Excel and emails. There's probably a better way. And, you know, everybody's talking about AI right now. So maybe localization is, or translation is, the early kind of use case for AI. Let's kind of start doing this. So a lot of customers, there's a lot of demand for that. And then obviously in the localization industry, there is a lot of movement on the market with the mergers and acquisitions, the companies trying to reposition for the AI first age, right? So everybody's trying to figure out, okay, what kind of products should we be selling? What is the messaging that we take to the market? How does the customer change and what are their needs? Could we build new products and what those products could be? What are maybe the new market segments that are being created, right? So there's a lot of these questions, strategic questions, the companies on both parts of the market spectrum are asking themselves. And that's where consultants come in handy, right? So I think the demand is there, and definitely it's growing, and so far so good.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that in our industry, you know, as you already know, you know, the industry in general is the population age in our industry is aging, right? So, and you see like a lot of these individuals such as yourself and myself who's been working for, and many others, not just the two of us, many others been working for not just large organization in the industry in general, mm-hmm. For many years. And they're at a, you know, at a fork in the road now. And I think you're the example. And now they, you know, they're wondering, what do I do? And, you know, is there an opportunity out there, and et cetera. So you've solved that by, you know, demonstrating, here's me, I've done it. And for others, if they want to use your case as an example, maybe they can reach out to you and ask you, how did you do it? In more details. But the question is, when you're detached, when you're outside of an organization and you're on your own now, and you are, you know, selling your expertise, your advice to others, the biggest question, I guess, in my mind, and somebody else who's possibly your customer, how do you stay up to speed on knowledge? How do you keep up with the latest, you know, advancement, process, procedures, technology, etc.? So what are the tools and methods, whatever you can share, we're not asking for secret recipes here, that you stay up to speed on the knowledge of the industry?
Yeah. I mean, it's a really good question. And the answer is not simple, but obviously it's about reading and kind of reading the industry news. It's about also trying to be as much connected with the developments in AI. And that is hard because there is so much going on every single week. There are new models coming online. There are new use cases. So that's really hard. But again, you have to devote a part of your day to just kind of reading. It's also networking. And I think this is the most useful, kind of staying in touch with some of the brightest minds in the industry and kind of comparing the notes. Sometimes you run into a particular challenge or issue, or somebody asks an interesting question, and you kind of reach out. And I think LinkedIn is an incredible tool here, and something that I use quite often to stay in touch with people. And it's sort of it's almost like a practice. Like every day, it's about thinking about your day. What do you want to do? It's about a bit of networking. It's a bit of hunting and looking for new customers. Then obviously doing and working on the particular projects you've got going on. So there's that. I try to read books. So for instance, today on my table, there's something around content design, which I think is really interesting because it's about kind of thinking about broader kind of end-to-end life cycle. And I think in localization industry, we're just focused on a fraction of it. So just kind of, you know, going outside of that box and thinking more broadly is super helpful as well.
Absolutely. Rounded knowledge. That's what you're aiming for, I'm assuming, in this case.
Yeah.
So now that you're sort of like not inside the side of the corporate side of the industry, but you're on the independent side of the industry, so you probably have different views now. You probably see things differently from the outside of the large organization looking to the industry versus being inside of a process kind of thing. So what is the status of the industry right now? And from your view, where are we?
Mm. Yeah, this is everybody asks this question. Everybody talks about this. I think it's, there are so many answers to this question, right? From a business perspective and kind of industry lifecycle perspective, you can say that we are going into the industry is becoming more mature through more and more acquisitions. There's more capital coming into the industry, right? So that's where we are. I think when it comes to AI, there is a lot of disruption, and that disruption comes in a number of shapes and forms. It disrupts traditional business models that LSPs and even technology companies had, right? It challenges the traditional paradigm, localization paradigm, where you generate content or create content in one language and then localize it into many. And then right now you can basically generate content into many languages, and it's high quality. It's kind of optimized for that particular market as well. So that changes the game, and everybody's trying to figure out where to go. I think the AI hype and the honeymoon with AI is slowly wearing off, and we are coming to this idea like, okay, there is this new fancy cool toy that everybody has. We've played with it. We know what it can do. We know what it cannot do. We started bringing it to our products, and customers are starting to ask about this. But now, since everybody kind of understands what it is and how it works, how do we make this work on scale, on quality? And I think today we are at this stage where everybody's starting to ask, like, you know, how do we make this work for us, right? Yeah. And that's a fascinating point.
So in your opinion, that the initial hype is over or what?
I think we are maybe not entirely, right? And especially because there's so many new developments, right? So the hype gets fueled, and you constantly see new models. And by models, I mean not only the LLMs that just generate text, but also when you think about video. When you think about video, I don't know, generative AI that generates video, right? Year and a half, it was very, very clunky. Today, it's like when you look at Sora, for instance, it's just incredible. And this is just, we are getting started, right? But on the other hand, I think the AI industry is an industry that is up and coming. It's developing. And overall, we are in very early stages of that industry, of that disruption. Mm-hmm. I always like to give the metaphor of internet of the 90s. Right, which is, imagine you're in 95, you've got this kind of World Wide Web, and you use it to.
I don't have to imagine it. I lived it.
There you go, right? and you kind of use it to post a very static web pages that basically sort of resemble a digital version of leaflet, where, you know, just around the corner, you've got e-commerce, you've got the web 2.0, you've got all of these amazing technologies that we today know, understand, and kind of take for granted, basically. And I think down the line for AI, the same thing is going. Just there is a lot of chaos, a lot of commotion, and not everybody understands where the things are going and what kind of emerges from that chaos, right? What is the next dominant paradigm in localization industry?
Yeah, and you know, one of the things is we take on in our industry, we think like we're getting hit like the hardest in our industry. We tend to be a little bit more melodramatic. But when we talk about AI, I mean, we talk about AI impacting the entire knowledge base economy, like the whole thing. It is like, if it doesn't matter if you are in whatever you're doing in the knowledge base economy, and there's thousands of services being provided in knowledge base economy, they're all being impacted equally, and some of them more severely than others. So, you know, when you talk to a law firm, or you're talking to a marketing company, or you're talking about a digital marketing company, or any service provider or content writers, etc., they're all being impacted by AI. And some of them, like I had a conversation with a colleague of mine yesterday on the content side, on the content writing side, they're seeing it as a positive. Like, I'm doing more. I'm providing better services to my customers. My customers are happier. I'm generating a little bit more money. So it's not a doom and gloom scenario. You know, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I agree. I think, first of all, I will say that, yes, localization industry is a bit melodramatic about the impact of AI. But then when you think about this, it really goes deep, the impact that AI has on the industry. And I think it comes early, in a sense. I think to a certain extent, localization industry is one of the pioneers when it comes in with AI. I mean, we've been doing AI for so many years. It's true. You know, when you think about this, like machine translations, one of the first machine translation projects that I did in my career was 2007, 2008. So very early in my career, right? And the way I view AI is it's just another productivity tool in the line of different productivity tools that we had, right? Before we had neural machine translation, we had statistical or hybrid machine translation. Before that, we had the translation memories and the CAT tools. And even before that, we likely had computers because people would do the translations on paper, right? So all of these kind of were dramatic shifts in how the business is done. But actually, over the years, and even with the previous big shift with neural machine translation in 2017-18, right, everybody was very worried what it means for localization and how it's going to transform it. It basically augmented the amount of content that gets translated to a point that I remember at Lionbridge we've been struggling in getting enough translators to translate content because there was more content, more diverse content for more languages coming in to be localized, right? Obviously, the flip side is customers were expecting a lower rates and more productivity because they would assume we would use machine translation.
Absolutely. Now, let's move on a little bit to, you know, somebody in enterprise using, you know, they have a localization department. And as we all know, localization in departments sometimes, in large organizations sometimes, depends on which organization it is. Sometimes they're strategic, sometimes they're not, sometimes they're in the middle. Depends on the company, right? Is there a role for AI there to elevate the importance, or not so much the localization in part, I guess?
Oh yeah, I totally think that AI changes the game for localization. And in that sense, I mean, let's play this out, right? You suddenly have all of the people equal access to AI that can generate unlimited amounts of content.
The genie's out of the bottle.
Exactly. and now what counts is actually the quality of that content. And it's not about the linguistic quality itself, but it's also how well the content serves its purpose, right?
Yep.
And I think being consistent, and that's why I was reading the book, The Content Design, right? Because I think it makes localization much more strategic and enforces the point around quality about, you know, how you manage your terminology, how you think about your content, end-to-end lifecycle content, right? So I think AI actually enforces the point that localization folks have been struggling to communicate to their customers and lead, or localization teams struggling to communicate to you know, business leaders in their companies to advocate for more spend, right? Today, I think localization becomes more about not output, the amounts of words you're translating, the number of errors per 1,000 words and stuff like this. It becomes more about content and about outcomes that content delivers, right? How much growth, how much clicks, how much visits it generates. So I think actually AI makes localization much more strategic than before.
I think I've seen somewhere there was a study published. There was a direct correlation between localization and revenue generation, and that is all connected now. And if you can mathematically present it, or scientifically present it in a way that if you do localization in a specific area, that's going to attract X amount of revenue and share price impact and all that stuff.
So yeah,
I'm assuming we go from being an administrative sort of a service sitting on the side to climb up the food chain in a strategy of an organization to directly impact the stock price of an organization.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah, I agree with that. And I think in terms of marketing, right? And now marketing has these kind of performance marketing tools, so you can monitor how content performs, right? If you combine it with generative AI, and you can suddenly, let's say, generate not one or two versions of your blog post, you can suddenly generate 10 different versions, put them immediately online, see which one performs better, and even kind of continuously optimize, tweak for performance as you go, right? So you kind of automate content optimization with generative AI. But also think about this, and this speaks to this internet of 90s metaphor, right? Think about what it means for content personalization. I can see down the road in not so distant future, reality where, I go to a website of a brand that I like, say, a sports brand that I use, right? And I want to check out new shoes or something. And, they quickly fingerprint me through the browser. So they know where I am, what kind of computer I use, maybe what kind of device I have, right? And so on and so forth. And perhaps if I'm logged in, they even know more about me from their marketing database, and they can adjust the content and personalize the content on the go so that my website looks completely different than yours visiting the same brand, right? And it happens on the fly. But that needs to be powered by, LLMs that have all of the information about the products, about the language and the
individual, I'm assuming, right?
And the individual, right? So that's I think super, super exciting thing. And I think there is a lot of marketing and mark tech companies that are working towards that.
And that's extreme personalization, which everybody's desire, right? So it's not anymore a sort of like an anonymous, or however you want to characterize it, visitor to a website. You're recognized as an individual and you're valued as an individual visitor to that website, knowing that probably you're not a customer yet, but you will eventually at some point become a customer.
Yeah. And it's really kind of elevates from thinking about just translation to thinking about content experiences and how you build these multilingual experiences for your customers. Right. So I think it literally makes language the dimension of a product or service, and localization industry, because we've been dealing with language and technology for so long, we are very well positioned to help customers solve these problems.
So we talk a lot about the commercial aspect, commercial aspect of localization, meaning there's two types of localization, right? So there's regulated translation. I'm obligated to translate because legislation or because many other reasons. And there is the commercial aspect of localization, where I see revenue generation attached to localization. So how does what we just talked about this morning, how does this transfer to a legislated or regulated localization aspect, be it a government or be it a institution of some sort? Does that story change or no?
Everybody's looking at AI and everybody's trying to see, how much they can leverage AI to increase productivity. I think with regulated industries, It's kind of two things are going on at the same time. One thing is it's kind of, everybody's interested about the productivity, but then again, on the other side, everybody's thinking, okay, but then it's not yet predictable enough. to suit our use case, right? Because we care about quality, right? When you think about, let's say, using AI for translation of healthcare content or patient outcome information or diagnosis, right? It's pretty important that this stuff is accurate and it works well, right? And in some cases, I would even say when you think about automating interpretations, for instance, in healthcare context, mm-hmm. it's difficult. I mean, healthcare is very personal. It also depends on kind of building that personal connection and connecting with the patient. And sometimes even dealing with very tough situation, you know, giving bad news to the patient, et cetera, right? So you cannot do this with AI. So I think I think there is an opportunity there and excitement around that, but there is also a consciousness that there are serious limitations to AI.
Yeah, like, you know, one of the things is when, you know, we think about AI by itself is that entire open network of AI engines that are distributed around the world.
Right.
And one thing at a, you know, 100,000 foot level kind of a thinking here is that how do you make sense of it when it comes to coexistence of AI within the ecosystem that we've built over the years when it comes to regulations? You know, Europe, GDPR, I guess, or GDPR, it's part of it. Like the entire personal information sharing part becomes a big, big problem.
Yeah, and I think legislation and generally governments a bit are on one hand conservative, but then again the pace of change is so huge that it's hard to catch up and it's hard to grasp all of the implications of AI, right? And what it means for, like, we started this podcast by saying like AI impacts so many different industries, right? And it perhaps makes some jobs obsolete or automates a lot of, you know, some tasks that people do. So suddenly you could argue that there might be, you know, significant amount of people seeing, you know, their jobs being automated. Like, how do you as a state or as a government, how do you deal with that complexity, right? And I think it's a transformation. But then again, I always come back to this wonderful quote from William Gibson, I guess, that, you know, yes, the future is already here, but it's not evenly distributed, right? It's this pockets of organizations and pockets of industries.
I love that. That's a good characterization.
Right. I think that the change doesn't come equally fast. And think about, I don't know, the transformation in the way we produce electricity, right? These technologies have been around for so long, right? We've been talking about electric cars for ages. And you know what? Yes, we've made significant progress, but we still, most of the cars, like 89, 90% of cars, are basically based on combustible engine, right? So I think we also underplay a bit the change management that needs to happen and what it means, how strong is the kind of how much time it takes to go through that change, right? So I wouldn't be worried that AI is going to, you know, put millions of people out of work tomorrow. It's going to be a transformation. And I think AI brings actually a lot of new opportunities that might not be super clear today, but they will crystallize over next quarters and years.
And as I've always said on this channel, is it's not, you don't have to worry about AI taking your job. It's, you got to worry about somebody who knows AI taking your job.
Yeah, that's perfect. perfect way to put it. Yeah.
So tell me, I mean, for customers who are just starting to take on AI into their work or into their process. And, you know, they probably, you know, the case could be made that if they ever use localization is the first case of using AI, as you mentioned earlier. AI, statistical machine translation, I remember the first iteration that came out, it was just a rule-based stuff that you probably came up with, you know, some output. Some people say, well, it did what it's supposed to do back then, and we improved on it from there. But one could make the case that was the early cases of AI, I'm assuming.
Yeah. And I think, you know, companies that are trying to figure out how they start with AI. I think it's start small, start with simple things, start experimenting. If you translate a lot of content, start looking at, you know, what kind of tools you use. Maybe there is a platform that you can use, or maybe there is a company that you can start working with to help you through that transition and journey. When you produce a lot of content and you've got a larger content team, start kind of playing with, you know, GPT and see, you know, how much content you can generate through it. And even I find where ChatGPT is super useful is just kind of brainstorming and sort of, you know, and kind of ideating, I guess.
Yeah.
Right. Trying to find, you know, different angles to look at the same thing. So there are so many use cases you can use AI for in a company. I would caution though to be careful not to, you know, to think about data security, right? Because it's easy to put your sensitive data into AI, right? And all of the freemium services are basically kind of using that data to train themselves. So I'll be cautious. I think it's very important to actually look, and every single company is unique in that sense, is look at what are the use cases where you could potentially look at where AI could be used, right? And kind of doing this within the company or bringing a consultant that helps you kind of look at this and identify certain use cases is a good way to start, right? Because it gives you an idea, like, what could you do? Then from that, you kind of transition to a mode where you start building business cases and try demonstrating, you know, potential savings, etc. And from that, you go into that full mode of kind of deploying and looking at particular solutions, right?
And I think right now, like when it comes to artificial intelligence, I think most organizations are putting like the speed racing, the pedal to the metal kind of thing, right?
They're
pressing hard on the gas on that one. They want to achieve, you know, they hear that there's this technology that probably don't understand it fully, but they hear that there's something out there, it's technology based, that allows them to save a lot of cost and improve the bottom line. And they're pushing everybody to embrace it quickly. And it goes both ways. I mean, that's the objective of the owners of these companies, but then there's objective of an employee. I want to get things done faster, quickly, with less stress. And AI allows me to do that. You know, if you work with it, you know, there's benefit for both here. Not necessarily because you're using AI, as we started talking earlier, that you're going to be replaced. But no, it's going to make your job easier.
Yeah. But I think there is also a lot of a kind of misunderstanding what AI is and what it can do, how far it can go. So maybe early this year, maybe late last year, I've heard of customers kind of going, you know, full in with AI, kind of getting rid of their, I don't know, content teams or localization teams, just, you know, a couple of months down the road, realizing like, okay, this is not as good as we thought, and we have to hire all of these people back, and we have to actually, you know, do it in a proper way and rethink our strategy, right? So I would advise against very quick kind of and this kind of wishful thinking. I would be very considerate and kind of think more strategically about AI. I think as with many other technologies, the old adage is true: garbage in, garbage out. So
that's right.
I think what's key to make your AI deployment successful in any kind of aspect of your business is really thinking about the data and building that data, thinking about what kind of data we have, what kind of data we need, how can we improve that data, mm-hmm. how can we build maybe knowledge models that could power the AI, because all that investment into data will pay back. And let me put this differently. When you think about localization companies, right, we've been talking to our customers about importance of curating glossaries, building translation memories, cleaning, keeping them in shape, creating the style guides, right? This is all super powerful data that you can use to power your AI, right? And to significantly improve output and quality of that output. So, I think localization industry is really well positioned to deliver on AI.
I think we always talk about a human in the loop, and the biggest dilemma right now, in the industry, not for us, for our customers, is to figure out how much human do I need to inject into the process.
Yeah.
What is the percentage of technology versus a human, and what is the sweet spot? And you know, I don't know. I mean, you're the expert here. Is there a magic formula for this, or is it experimentation?
Well, I think there's no magic formula, and there's no specific answer. Like for this, it's, you know, 50-50 or I don't know, 80-20, right? And I would venture to say this changes over time, right? So I think it's more about process and more about thinking strategically and optimizing. I think when we look at translation, we've been seeing the amount of human intervention diminishing, and we can see from a bunch of companies that are, you know, tech-enabled LSPs that have a lot of technology behind their TMSs, that they kind of continuously improve and increase the amount of content that gets automatically processed, translated, or in whatever way transformed. So that's happening, but that, you know, that there is always a fraction that's done by humans, and because there is ever more growing amount of content that is being localized and translated, the work for humans there will always be more and more. Even if that percentage that you have to handle, you know, diminishes at 2% out of you know, million words, is still a lot of work. And then, you know, tomorrow it's going to be a billion words, right? So I think there will always be a fraction that humans need to address.
And you know, you brought up a very good point, which is we always neglect to emphasize and stress on, is AI is causing the amount of content to grow exponentially. Yeah. So the Gen AI aspect of things, it's causing, before we used to create content using, you know, manual ways of creating content, now we have an easier way of creating content and an effective way of creating content. If you do it well, if you use the right prompting, this is producing decent quality content.
Right. And I think it's also about thinking which part of the localization or your content process you automate, right? Because we think kind of automating late stage, maybe QA, maybe the whole translation, right? But actually AI helps you, pushes the stress on the quality, which means it pushes it more on the left of the process, right? It means like design your content better, have better materials, language assets to power your AI. And then your content that comes out of AI is going to be much more predictable. It's going to be higher quality, and you will be able to actually scale much faster, right? Think about this challenge that companies have to contend today with. Right. You are, let's say, a company that has a SaaS company. You have, I don't know, 10 different products. You operate globally, maybe on 60 different markets. You've got your customers, you know, on many different channels. Think email, think blogs, websites, YouTube channels, right? Twitters. Like there's so much content you have to manage across the different content types, different languages, different digital channels. You have to get your AI right because you cannot get to the scale and quality and that content velocity quickly enough if you don't get your data right and your AI right.
Absolutely. Now, as we wrap up the conversation, and you know, I can't get enough of this conversation. This is my passion, I guess, to continue on with these types of conversations. And this is what this channel is about, to allow me to have these types of conversations.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fascinating topic, isn't it? Like,
it's a bit of a selfish thing on my side too.
Yeah.
Before we move on, one last thing. You know, is it game over or is it game on? Like, what is your outlook?
Yeah. Oh, so I'm biased because I'm kind of optimist by definition. So for me, it's definitely game on, but it's not effortless, right? We all have to challenge ourselves, how we think about localization as a business, how we think about localization as a process. We have to all start thinking more broadly. So not maybe only about translation and localization, but also about end-to-end content lifecycle. And we have to think about customer, right? Because, you know, customers are struggling with this, right? If They are on the market. Their competitors are maybe more advanced on AI. They feel that competitive pressure. They need to catch up, or they need to move quicker. And we, as an industry, right, not having these skills, talents, technologies, we can help people and companies get up to speed with AI and help them make more impact, right? So I think we have to think about customer first and how we bring value, add more value to them through the services that we can render. And, you know, it's going to be less about translation. It's going to be more about content strategy. It's going to be more about quality assurance. It's going to be more about building these language assets, curating and helping customers frame that global brand voice of theirs to use for different AIs. But I think the opportunity is there, and I'm pretty excited about the localization industry.
Absolutely. Before, thanks for this, and thanks for your time today, Gaetan. I really appreciate
My
it.
My pleasure.
It's been a pleasure to have this conversation with you. It's refreshing, and it's always good to talk about a topic that we both feel so strongly about. So thanks again for joining me today on this podcast. I know it's afternoon for you, but it's early in, but it's 10 o'clock for me in the morning here. And we still have a full day of meetings ahead of us. I'm sure your work is not done yet. Any last comments, last observation before we wrap it up?
Well, as I said, I think it's super exciting times. And I think it's just being a bit patient, but also being very open and kind of experimenting with the technology. And yeah, I mean, if you guys feel like, you know, you want to just chat and brainstorm and, you know, you have some exciting ideas, just feel free to reach out.
I was thinking about a panel discussion, and, you know, one of the things that I would like to do here is I do like some sort of a round table discussion on the podcast, you know, you and a couple of other experts and put them on the podcast, and talk about it. It's an important enough topic that we continue the dialogue on it. I don't think we talk about it enough. And the more voices out there in the ether, I think it lights up the light. It lights up the way for many people that they're looking for guidance in this.
Yeah. Totally. I think it's a super good idea.
Again, thanks so much for being a guest on the podcast today. For our audience, thank you so much for listening in or viewing us on YouTube, whatever channel you're using. And thanks for liking and sharing this content. I appreciate your support. And to our guest, Gaetan Melinowski, thank you so much for joining me again. From Robin and Gaetan, thanks to everybody. And we'll see you at the next episode. Thanks again.
Thanks, everyone.